Have you ever thought, I really want to read a classic or should read a classic, or I've missed out on so many books that people tell me I should read, but feel totally lost on how to get started? We have got you. In today's episode, we talk about so many tips and tricks for diving back into the classics and six perfect recommendations to get you going.
Hi, I'm Trisha.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Elizabeth, and welcome to Book Fair Podcast.
Do you love books, or do you want to?
Are you tired of picking up the latest new release and finding it's filled with junk you don't want in your life?
Has motherhood somehow made your brain a dusty shamble?
Friend, you are in the right place. We are three friends and mamas on a mission to create a fun, bookish community, pursuing a deeper life through the reading life.
We are your trusted source for books of all flavors.
Always grounded in truth, goodness, and beauty.
So, if you're ready for scrumptious literary fare among friends,
grab your cup of coffee, your load of laundry, or the steering wheel,
and pull up a seat at the table.
Okay, so moving on to our main topic for today, which is getting started with the classics. So we've talked about reading the classics, you know, quite a bit here. We have, all three of us have great love for many classic books. And we've talked about the importance of classics and why we love them. And we'll probably touch on that a little bit. But I just want to start this off by saying that it can be legitimately hard to pick up a new classic or start reading classics when you're not used to it. It just is. It can be difficult and daunting, and the language can be intimidating, and sometimes classics are a little bit slower paced than, you know, a thriller you might pick up. So it can be legitimately hard. Sometimes it's hard for me to pick up and start a new classic. Do you guys have that experience?
Yeah, I think it's, you get this reaction from other people when you say a book that you've picked up that's a great work, and everybody goes, oh, wow. Or, oh, good for you. Okay. And there's this big moment that already put so much tension on the whole thing, where if you just said, like, yeah, I just found this random book at the library, people would be like, good for you reading a book. And so we kind of do that to ourselves as a society. And then we begin to think, well, who am I to read this book? Who do I think I am?
Yeah, as if you have to be somebody really special or really serious.
Or taking
really
a class. Like, I'm reading this for my class.
Yeah.
No, I'm just reading it
like
for my brain.
Like, it's not something, right, like it's not something normal people do.
You know, I think we are hitting the most important point off the bat. Identifying as a reader is very important, even if you're in progress. Because what makes a great book or a classic is that it talks about fundamental truths and what it means to be human. And so your only qualification for reading classics is being a human, because we are created to desire story.
Yeah. But that being said, there can be legitimate hurdles to picking up those books. Like, I think we all probably had books that were assigned to us in school that we hated, that we felt like we had to just trudge through. I didn't have many of those because I really love, like, pretty much everything. But I had a couple, and it scarred me. Like, I had to read Ethan Frome in 11th grade, and I hated it so much. I felt like it was like a slog through the land of depression and nothingness. And I hated it. And so I remember thinking, oh, if other people feel this way about reading more books, like, no wonder they complain about these books that, you know, they have to read. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I get it.
You kind of have to shed your high school experience in a lot of ways. I didn't really like any of the books we read. I didn't get it. I didn't understand the books when I read them. I don't remember anything beneficial from the class that helped illuminate anything about the book for me at all.
Wow.
Well, high school's often a time where we thrive on sameness, and classics are often taking place in another time period. And so it can be at that point in life, if you're not practiced, hard to extract that they're a person just like me. Now, if you're coming to this later in life, then you kind of know people are people through all times. And so I'm going to find something in common here. I just have to get to that part.
Yeah.
Yeah. So coming from that high school experience, and Trisha, talking to your point about that it can be legitimately difficult, it's like your brain is a muscle. So reading is kind of like your brain's exercise. And so you kind of have to just start where you are. And we're going to talk about that more and give you great recommendations for that. But it can be a little boring or painful or uncomfortable at first because it's different, maybe because it's not social media. It's not a thriller or a very modern popular fiction book, which is mainly driven by plot. They don't just reveal themselves to you necessarily. So it takes a little bit of effort. But if you just go slowly at first and work up to it, you will reap all the benefits.
So I love the way you just said that. And that is the purpose of this episode. This episode is about, okay, if you're at that point where you're like, I hear you, I've heard you talking about the benefits of classics, and yeah, they've been recommended by history. You know, these are the things that have withstood the test of time and people have loved them forever. But I don't know where to start. How do I start with something that's not going to make me want to pull my hair out? So that's what we're doing today. So Amanda, I think you have brought a few tips for being able to do this.
So my first tip is something that I say quite a bit on this podcast. Understanding is overrated. Let the language wash over you. And I have to credit Andrew Curran of Searcy Institute for understanding is overrated. So you do not have to read your classic book and understand everything about it. You're not going to. And that is okay. That's the process. That's okay. Use an easy entryway, which we're going to give you recommendations for three of those in just a minute, such as children's classic literature, light classics, and short stories. But a couple other ports of entry are books that have a familiar plot to you already. Maybe there's a movie you've seen several times, but you haven't read the book yet, like maybe Tolkien or Austin, Dickens, something like that. There's a lot more. And maybe there's a genre you already know you like. Even if it's not literature, maybe it's TV or movies. You could start with a book that's that same genre, so because that's a comfort place for you. Okay, this has been a big thing that has helped me, is reading the children's version first. Mm. There are so many great children's versions of, I don't know if the right word, heavier classics. Beowulf, Homer, Shakespeare, all of those I have read only after I've read a children's version first.
So you're meaning like an abridged?
Yeah. Abridged. Something that not just like starting with the classics, you know, those children's books that it's not the whole book, but it's some of it, it's abridged in that way. I don't mean like those. I mean a retelling of it by a skilled writer. Thank you for asking. That's a very important point. For example, Rosemary Sutcliffe wrote Beowulf Dragonslayer, and it is less than 100 pages. And I read that before I read Beowulf.
Yeah, there are some really good graphic novel interpretations of some of those things. It was funny because when you said that at first, I thought, oh, I've never done that. And then I was like, wait, I read a graphic novel version of The Odyssey.
There you go.
Yeah. And it was really great.
There's an audiobook of The Odyssey that Nate listens to over and over and over again when he cleans his room. And it is just a total retelling. And I don't know that I would have thought to separate those like that. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, that's a really important point. Another thing that has really helped me personally, and I know it has helped you too, is read with friends.
We're all about that.
I.e. a book club. Yeah, a book club. Or maybe there's just one person that you say, do you want to read this book with me? And you text about it or you call or, you know, every chapter or something like that. Reading your book aloud can really be helpful.
Yes. I do that a lot. That one is the first thing that ever like changed it for me was if I could say it out loud. And I don't know why. Your brain just absorbs it differently, I guess.
I never do that. Unless I'm like reading to someone. I've never done that. That's so interesting. I'll have to try that the next time I'm like struggling with something.
When I'm having trouble focusing, I do that and it really helps. Mm-hmm. I have this quote from Andrew Clavin here. says it takes a certain amount of discipline and work. We look at reading as entertainment, which is not a problem, but we don't want to put work into entertainment. If you could give 15 minutes a day to read something like Dostoevsky out loud, it's harder for your mind to wander when you are reading out loud. It's so rewarding. Start with Dickens. He's so entertaining once you get used to the language. Start with Christmas Carol. It's short. Very few great books are written, and it's a shame to miss out on them.
Mm.
That had several tips in there compactly, but he does talk about why he suggests reading out loud, and I have found that to be the case as well. And 15 minutes a day, reading in short bursts. Look, if you can do a paragraph and you're like, okay, my brain is worn out. That was my 5-pound weight that I've lifted and that's all I can do. That is great.
I also loved in the episode with Heidi White when she talked about, and we will put a link to that in the show notes if you'd like to go back to that episode. She just has so many wonderful things to say about on this topic. But the idea of, like, go get 5 from the library and just try them.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, put it down. Like, you also don't have to be like, I've decided I'm going to read Pride and Prejudice. I'm going to do it if it kills me, if I hate it, or, you know, like, you don't have to do that. Pick up 5 or 6, grab them, try them, see which one you like. And then whichever one kind of pulls you in a little bit, then maybe do the effort to read a little bit of it every day.
The pen is mightier than the sword, but no one should die by Pride and Prejudice. Just don't do that.
That's great. And listeners, if you're newer around here, for Trisha to say it is okay for you to not finish this book is a big deal, because she is a completionist.
True.
So good for you. And along those lines of what you just said, Trisha, I have heard give older books 100 pages before you let it go. Give it a chance. You need, your brain needs time to get acclimated.
But I would say, if this is truly your first foray, you don't have to muscle through 100 pages before you give up.
Sure.
Like, if you're doing that strategy of like, I got 5 at the library, I'm going to kind of see what appeals to me, you don't have to read 100 pages of it. Read the first 20 pages of 3 or 4 of them and see which one you like. That's totally okay too.
Absolutely. Something that has maybe helped me the most is reading along with a mentor or people that I trust who know what they're talking about. That has really helped me a lot. I've got 2 more. Rereading. Guess what? We have a whole episode about this. Episode 48 is rereads. But I will say it is so helpful to have layers with a book. Have a couple readings. They don't have to be right in a row. The first one can be fast. You're just getting the characters and plot. And then the second one, you could even go slower and dive into how all the pieces, metaphors, symbols, how they all come together. Okay, last thing. I have learned through homeschooling the kids, we read a lot of myths and fairy tales in the beginning. And I was just trusting the system, right? We did Ambleside Online at home and classical conversations once a week in community. But I just trusted when people said, read myths and fairy tales. They are all through the great books. And that has been so helpful. And I get so excited when I read something and I know what it's talking about. We read the Norse fairy tales. And then I was reading a Chesterton short story or essay. And he mentioned, I'm not going to try to say the name, but the Norse tree of life, basically. And he mentioned it. I was like, oh, I understand this reference. It's such a great feeling. So we talk a lot about other things like this in our episode, our recent episode, Habits of Virtue of Good Readers. I think it's number 85. And episode 3, When It's Been a While, How to Get Back into Reading When You Haven't in a While. Those will also be linked in the show notes.
I love that. Those are some great tips. So now we are going to talk about some specific works that we think might be perfect entryways to starting to read classics or getting back to classics if you haven't read one for a while. So we're going to start with Elizabeth, who loves, loves children's books. We're going to start there.
Okay, so maybe it is just the spacing of, you know, I have 2 boys that are 11 years apart, so I have been in the read out loud phase for a long time, which I now maintain the read out loud phase is forever. I think I just have done it so long, I've decided I'm not going to give it up. So children's classics are probably one of my favorite, maybe I'll move past this one day, but one of my favorite things to read because you can enjoy it on any level. And so that means you as a 40-year-old woman who just wants to pick up a book for the first time in forever, you can pick up a children's classic. Or if you're looking for something to connect with a child, you're both going to enjoy. There's many. It's a deep well. But I brought two today that are my favorites. And they're my favorites because I had wonderful connection over them. So one is The Secret Garden. Now, if you have been in Barnes & Noble and seen a beautiful flowery cover for The Secret Garden and thought, oh, I'm a boy mom. I'm not going to read that. Or I'm not going to read it to my child. You're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. Repent of that. Go back and get that book. This story is about mindset and perspective and our brain's power over our ability to have a good day or to have a good life or to be healthy. What you witness as this story slowly unravels is that I can decide to have mental fortitude and decide to have a good perspective and try to set my mind somewhere. And I might be able to do that, but if somebody loves me and tends me like a garden, or if I love and tend my spouse or friend or children like a garden and love them, those things will bloom on their own. And so that is a beautiful lesson about any relationship that you're in your life. Now, the way this story unfolds is between two children that you meet separately, and they are brats and they are sickly. And then suddenly they begin to have a little color in their cheeks, have a little more energy, have a little more care about somebody else in their life. And then they begin to have a world outside of themselves. So that's like the quick telling that doesn't spoil any of the plot. So that's my first one. My second one is, oh, wait, I have to give you a few quotes because I feel like quotes are the things that tie some people in. Probably me for sure. So one quote from The Secret Garden, it is the sun shining on the rain and the rain falling on the sunshine. At first, people refuse to believe that a strange new thing can be done. And then they begin to hope it can be done. And then they see it can be done. And then when it is done, all of the world wonders, why was it not done centuries ago? I love that. That's one of my favorites from it. And then another quote, I'll just give you one more. It says, the magic in this garden has made me stand up. And I know that I'm going to live to be a man. And I'm going to make a scientific experiment of trying to get to some and put it in myself and make it push and draw me and make me strong. I don't know how to do it. But I think if you keep thinking about it and calling on it, perhaps it will come. So, favorite. I love that book. If you just think this is the year I'm going to read a classic, I don't care who you are. I would say you should start with that. My other one that I love so much is Peter Pan. And this goes to Amanda's point of maybe you already know the plot. And I think you'll find the Disney Peter Pan to be very different, but it'll be just enough that you know it's about a boy who flies around and doesn't want to grow up. You know that already. So you can now start this book and say, oh, well, here's so much more adventure. The themes even, you might know, like, well, it's sad to grow up. There's so much more fun to be had when we can be mischievous. There's so much fun to be had with our imagination. So this one might be a great one to start with because you already know so much of that. I love that Amanda brought that up. But where you might sink a little deeper as an adult is I remember as a kid sitting in my room mad about who knows what that I had probably done that I was sure was my mom's fault and thinking, I am going to remember what it's like to be a kid when I grow up so that I am a really good mama. Well, every mama remembers, and that's why she's making those decisions. And so that moment of it is good to grow up and it is necessary, but if I can remember joy, if I can remember creativity, if I can remember imagination, how much is that going to bless my journey and my relationship with my kid? But honestly, I just think any creative outlet that we have in life, if we can be an adult who does not shirk responsibility, but have that little glimpse of imagination that we bring into every spot in our life. So I have a few quotes here. It says, all the world is made of faith and trust and pixie dust. I love that so much because we have these it marries that adult and child dichotomy that this book holds, that we do have to make a plan and get stuff done, but there's that little bit of I don't know that's going to really see it through. And isn't that wonderful? Isn't it okay that we can trust that? And then I have this other quote, y'all, that I could just pin this on my bathroom mirror. Anytime I want to try to do something hard, I have to say this to myself. The moment you doubt that you can fly, you cease to forever be able to do it.
Wow.
Don't you love that?
I love it so much.
I mean, obviously, I'm not jumping off my roof flying, but if I think I might want to try something new, sometimes it does sound about as silly as me jumping off my roof. Like, well, I'm not a person who does that. Well, I mean, if I think I can, I might be able to.
Elizabeth, I can just tell, like, these are
this is my favorite subject.
Like, I got chills both times listening to you talk about these books. It's just so beautiful, and I can just feel, like, the meaning and the passion. I'm like, I want to go read them again right now.
Do it right now, and then call me.
Amazing. So, Amanda, you are going to dive into a second way. Elizabeth covered children's classics. It's a good way to dive in. And you have a second way to dive in. What is it?
Very famous Edgar Allan Poe, a master of the short story and super creepy and fun. Mm-hmm. Rice just last year read The Telltale Heart. And I actually asked him, hey, remember when you read short stories? I'm doing an episode here that I need to suggest short stories. And I said, which one was your favorite from the year? And he said, probably The Telltale Heart. So I was like, oh, that's a great pick. Of course, Edgar Allan Poe. He's reading The Gold Bug next year. So I'm going to read that too, because I've never read that one. I'm excited to read it. The Pit and the Pendulum, The Fall of the House of Usher, The Purloined Letter. He has so many fantastic and well-known short stories. So he's a good one to start with. Start with The Telltale Heart. You probably already know the story of that one. And his stories really make you think. So my second recommendation for short stories is by an author that I love and I have read a good bit of so far, Dorothy Sayers. She has one of my top three heroes, Lord Peter Wimsey, who is a detective. He is wicked smart, but has such a charming way, such a personable way interacting with people. He solves a lot of mysteries. He is her Sherlock Holmes, her Hercule Poirot. So she has written many short stories about him. And I didn't know this till the last year or two. So I found a short story collection of hers, of Lord Peter's stuff, in a library sale. It's just called Lord Peter, a collection of all the Lord Peter Wimsey stories. Each one is a great mystery. And there's a lot of humor in it.
That's so fun. Yeah, I can see that as being just a great place to dive in. I mean, short stories, first of all, I mean, they're short. That's like the beauty of it. So instead of worrying about like what we were talking about, like how many pages until I give up, or is this going to grab me? Just didn't read a short story, one setting and you're done. So, and mysteries are so fun. I do not love mysteries as much as Amanda. I sometimes find a full novel length mystery to be a little tedious, but I really like them in short story form. So I think this is a great idea. Amazing. Okay. So we have children's classics. We have short stories. Our third category is what we're calling light or just very accessible classics. So I have a couple of these I wanted to toss out. The first one is one we just did in our In Real Life book club, Dracula by Bram Stoker. So this hits a couple of points we've already talked about. One, you already know some of the plot. Even if you don't know anything, you know some things about Dracula. Like, it's just in the public consciousness. So you know it's a monster who sucks blood, who has these powers, who you can fend off with garlic and crucifixes. Like, there are things you know going in. Like, what are we getting into? And the other thing I love about this is that it just starts off with a bang. There is a little bit of description, like in the very first bit, it starts as a travel journal. This man is traveling to Transylvania to conduct business. He's a lawyer, to conduct business with the Count. And of course, we know what that means. So we start seeing all this creepy, spooky things that are happening along the way. But it really moves quickly for a classic. So this would be a great one to pick up, start it going. Man, if you don't want to know what happens to Arthur in Dracula's castle, I mean, it's just not your thing. But Yeah. I mean, come on. What is going to happen? So it's just, it moves quickly and it's kind of just a fun Victorian romp through, you know, a monster landscape. And just knowing for me, just knowing that this was the starting point of the story, someone brought this research to book club. There have been more Dracula movies made than any other character in cinema.
Wow.
Yeah, or Sherlock Holmes or Batman. No, it is Dracula. There is an average of 3 major Hollywood movies. We're not talking little independent film. 3 every year.
What?
Dracula movies. Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy. So just knowing like this is the starting point for that kind of cultural icon, like just that is so fascinating to me. So I think there's like multiple hooks for Dracula. So pick it up and try it.
That's
Bram Stoker's Dracula.
That's a great recommendation.
Thank you. Thank you. So my second recommendation is also like kind of in the spooky mystery. It was kind of the Edgar Allan Poe ball field, ballpark. It is Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier. Now, if you're a purist listening to this podcast, do not send me an email that says Rebecca is not a classic. I will not listen to it. It was written in the 1930s. That is old enough to be a classic in my book. And also, we are talking about starting points. So it would be a great starting point. Go back to something written in 1930 where the language isn't as old as Dickens or something in translation like Anna Karenina. It can be a good bridge to getting into classics. So I pulled up Rebecca, and I mean, it's old enough to be a free PDF. So there. So I pulled up this PDF of Rebecca, and it is so mysterious and atmospheric and spooky. Just to give you a little teaser, this woman marries a man on vacation, you know, on holiday in Europe, meets a man, marries him, and he takes her back to Manderley, which the property, the mansion Manderley, is its own character in the book. Like there is so much about this house and what has happened there and the secrets it's keeping. It's big and spooky and sprawling. So he brings her back to this house. And once they get there, all of these weird, spooky things start to happen. And she realizes there's a lot she does not know about him. So it's very creepy. So I'm going to read you just a little bit. It starts this way. It's a very famous beginning to a novel. Last night, I dreamt I went to Manderley again. It seemed to me I stood by the iron gate leading to the drive, and for a while I could not enter, for the way was barred to me. There was a padlock and chain upon the gate. I called in my dream to the lodgekeeper and had no answer, and peering closer through the rusted spokes of the gate, I saw that the lodge was uninhabited.
It's great.
You have a good creepy voice too. I didn't know that about you.
And both of these are really great picks in terms of thinking of reading with a mentor or reading with an expert, so to speak. Close Reads podcast has read Rebecca, and the Literary Life podcast has done Dracula. So if you want someone to hold your hand through that process, those are doubly great recommendations. And there's so much in Dracula about modern man and seeing the spiritual world as just as real as the tangible world. So there's a lot of great stuff in there.
There's also, I'll throw this in, this was one of my favorite things on this reading, is that I did not know the first time I read it that Bram Stoker was Irish. And so he was an Irish Catholic. And from the very beginning, as Arthur is on his way to the castle, these peasants are forcing him to take this crucifix. If you are going to insist on going there,
you have to have it.
Take this crucifix with you. And he's like, I always thought these were like idolatrous, but they're forcing it on me. So I'm going to take it. So there's this like interesting tension between Catholicism and Protestantism that Bram Stoker is like saying, this embodied spirituality is where it's at. Like all you people that think like tangible symbols and like tangible manifestations of spirituality are going to do you no good. Let me tell you, if you're going to fight Dracula, you got to have him. And I thought that was so fascinating.
It was a very interesting conversation of the day that he brought in.
Yeah, he's like, sticking it to the Anglicans, like, you think you're okay over there, but wait till Dracula comes. You're going to want this crucifix.
That's really interesting. And that's crazy to think about. What if you were the person that came up with with the iconic story of vampires?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Frankenstein, or any of these other monsters that we have in literature and movies. That'd be something if you were the person that invented that. Well, there you have it. 6 recommendations for you to jump into the classics or ease your way into the classics. So we would love to know what you think. What are your recommendations? Would you like any help getting started? We have a fantastic group of people in our Facebook group, and anyone in there would be happy to help you and cheer you on your way.
And until next time, I'm Trisha.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Elizabeth.
And happy reading.
We are so glad you are here with us today. We can't wait to continue this conversation in the Facebook group. If you're not a member of our online community, look us up at Book Fair Podcast or connect with us on Instagram at Book Fair Podcast. We'd also love for you to visit our website, bookfairpodcast.com.
If this episode has meant something to you, the very best way to help us is to leave a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It is so helpful.
We look forward to more stories and shared ideas with you. So next time you've got dishes to do or a cup of tea to drink, we're here for you in the next episode. We'll see you next Tuesday.